You're listening to Raising Anchor, the Rhode Island FC podcast, now part of the Blazing Musket family. We're glad you're here. And welcome to Raising Anchor, your podcast and source for all things Rhode Island FC. I'm your host, Matt Entrican, coming to you live on Thursday, June 20th. RIFC returns from a 10-day break to travel down to Louisville City FC, where they will be looking to kind of change their fortunes against a team that has been playing lights out and sits alone at the top of the table by a considerable margin. Is this game to be worried about ahead of a midweek matchup next week? And is the current NBA champion Celtics coach Joe Mazzulla an owner of Rhode Island FC? We're going to figure all of that out today and so much more. And to discuss all of that with me is the co-host with the most, Jason Carey. Jason, how's it going, my friend?
Not too bad. A bit exhausted, not going to lie. But I'm ready to go. Looking forward to the game. It feels like it's been a lifetime since we've last seen them play. Maybe the break's kind of been good, though, you know? Well, the team has kind of put us under some duress sometimes, you know?
I mean, it hasn't gone well for us because I feel like this many days off, we are like out of sorts. We did two episodes last week. I mean, if you think about it, you and I know that we normally do show notes, you know, the Monday after, get it all prepped. And then as new news drops in, we add that in.
We
just completely forgot to do show notes until today. And so this kind of felt like a job for the first time ever.
We had a little bit of a skeleton, but definitely not as much work as we normally do throughout the week. And we're just kind of putting the finishing touches on it, you know?
Right. Yeah. So like, hey, listen, if that's what it is at the end of the day, you know, I can live by it, but that doesn't mean that I like it at all. So let's get in here. Nate's already in the chat. Anchors up, RIFC. Nate, we love you. Good to see you here, buddy. Let's get into this. On top of the break, I mean, you know, for us, we joke about it, but the players probably did enjoy it to a certain degree, right? You know,
They
don't get a lot of weekends off in what we would consider, you know, the favorable months. It's almost like the rest of the soccer world has figured it out that, like, give the players the breaks during the hottest times of the year so that they can go out and enjoy vacations themselves and all of that. Here, they have to usually play, especially as a New Englander, you have to play through the best weather. So getting a weekend off is a rare treat. On top of that, you know, it was Father's Day. We had Juneteenth celebrations, which are now coming this week as well. It's been a crazy time. I have to say, like, I don't normally talk about myself and my family, but I have my son out right now, and that's been fantastic. Nothing made me more proud than having him, one, have a drink with us. You know, I have an older son. We won't get into the details of that, but having him then pay the bill without me knowing he paid the bill. And then on top of that, later that night, just randomly came down and fed me a quesadilla. No questions asked. Like, I've raised a good kid. So I'm really proud of him. Had a really good time with it. But all that aside, I'm ready to get back into the swing of things with soccer. I'm ready to sit here and talk more soccer with you. Let's get into this. And it is a busy week for soccer right now.
It's busy month.
It's busy like 4 years at this point. We've got a lot going on. So first and foremost, Copa kicks off right now. We chose the best time in the world to start talking soccer with Copa literally kicking. I mean, that's probably where all our fans are right now.
Yeah, they're probably
not watching this. They're out living their best life. They're going to listen to this tomorrow morning at their 5 a.m. drive.
They're probably out there trying to watch the Jesse Marsh masterclass. He's going to put a stop to Messi. The Marshter class.
Oh, man.
Sorry, I'll see myself out.
Dad jokes were for Father's Day. Get out of here with that. Speaking of, though, with Argentina kicking off against Canada tonight, two things that were really interesting. One, did you see the no Messi, no party situation?
Yeah, hashtag not an MLS podcast, but like there was a full slate of MLS games on last night. And we had mentioned, too, with their ridiculous schedule, they're like over halfway done through the season, which is ridiculous. And it's June.
Well, it's so not only that, I actually was looking at a stat, pulling some stuff down. The MLS is so weird right now because they have this break. Well, not a break, but they're missing players for the Copa if they have really good talent on their squads. But then after that, they have Leagues Cup. So,
yeah, so dumb.
Yeah, so really, by the time all these like inter-tournaments are done, and even if you count like the Open Cup for the teams that are still in it from the MLS side of things, you don't get back to regular play until there's only about 7 weeks left. That's how like condensed in chunks it is. But like after the transfer windows are done, like you're going to be seeing 5 to 8 games, depending on if you had double game weeks where you might not have your like starting 11 that you want to see on the pitch. So it's a really interesting time for that league. But again, not an MLS podcast. And by the way, also on Marsh, did you see the stats on like the way coaches at international team levels are paid? And did you see where Greg Berhalter was?
No, I missed that one.
He wasn't at the top. So he wasn't even close. I think he was like bottom of like the top 10. But it just goes to kind of show you like we're always talking about like, oh, when are we going to take it serious and try to win a World Cup, try to get that team assembled, that talent built? Well, it starts with paying your leadership at least enough to be competitive and attract that talent across the pond.
I imagine a lot of that depends on how much money these organizations can generate. And they're tied together, right? If the U.S. men's does well, then they're going to generate a lot of fandom, a lot of buzz. They're going to sell tickets, they're sell jerseys, and they make money, and they'll have money to pay a better coach. So
it's weird how money solves all, winning and money solve everything in this world. So who would have ever thought? But then on top of the Copa, we also got the Euros, and I've been loving the Euros because one, Scotland, we've already been making the jokes. They got a draw, but they're not doing the hottest. But have you seen all like the food bashing?
Yeah, it's pretty silly. It's fun kind of seeing the fans though come together and have a laugh before they get into a stadium and yell at each other.
100%. And then finally, on the Euro note, are we going to talk about the secret that you revealed to me earlier this week about your origin stories? I've been telling everyone you're Irish, and that's a lie.
I am no. So I am mostly Irish, mm-hmm. but my grandmother was like part Danish. So, you know, there's Denmark. Funny thing about that actually is throughout the 2010s and a lot of the European qualifying, Ireland and Denmark kept like meeting each other and Denmark kept beating Ireland. So there's like a mini kind of, I don't know if I want to call it a rivalry there, but just to kind of like a big brother kicking you out of the way, like, nope, you're not coming to this tournament.
So are you conflicted from time to time?
Maybe there's kind of some internal struggles there.
I hope you enjoyed the game against England today. I can tell you most English people probably didn't enjoy it as much as you did. If it came down to it though, World Cup on the line, are you now Denmark or are you Ireland? Or it doesn't matter because you're always American.
I'd always root for America first. It'd be cool to see Ireland do well, but you know, Robbie Keane doesn't play for them anymore.
They've got Mark Doyle. What are you talking about? They don't need anything else besides Mark Doyle.
I don't know. They're you know, they can be fun to watch sometimes, but most of the time not. You know, I guess I can kind of root for Denmark sometimes, but a similar kind of, they're at best a dark horse, you know?
Sure. So let's get into this. Nate's already dropping he's already dropping the stats for the game. I love it. So let's get into this big news, the kind of hot off the press news that was in all of people's Instagram and Twitters today about potentially Celtics coach Joe Mazzulla owning a part of Rhode Island FC. And it was really interesting. This came up because, like, one, he's a native from Rhode Island, so it's a big deal. And you know, he's at the height of all the attention right now with the recent championship win with the Celtics, which, by the way, they call themselves the world champions for a league that only competes in one. It's such a weird thing.
I think all of our sports do that though, right? I mean, the World Series, right?
Yes. That one's even worse though, because like they call it that for the entirety of its time. I'm in a much smaller and like older ecosystem of, you know, we were the only place that played the sport and all the attention was here. Sure. But now that all these other countries have their own leagues, it's kind of like, okay, maybe you just be like the NBA champions because that's what you are. Anyways, I digress. But yeah, I was getting confused out there. A lot of people were asking. I got a couple of DMs about it, but other people started kind of getting to their own conspiracy theories or their own kind of information. I guess ChatGPT inside the Discord was standing up a lot of like, well, if ChatGPT says it, it must be true that, that Joe
everything on the internet is true, right?
I mean, 100%. And what's really fascinating, especially with ChatGPT, is like ChatGPT just pulls what you say into it, and then it pulls a record log of if that's the case or not. So the fact that people were saying like, well, hey, if it says it there, no, that just means that someone put the keystrokes together to create that log.
You tweet something and then you ask ChatGPT and then it just quotes you and says, well, you said it. It has to be true, right?
Exactly. So we can kind of clear the air on this a little bit so that we don't have to go and bug people online about it. One is he doesn't own the club. And there's two things that you can say about that. One is I have a little bit of an expanded knowledge of the owner group as well as the board of directors. And I've never heard his name. And I feel like he's such a big presence and a big personality that we would have known about that a long time ago.
I feel like that would have leaked sooner if that was actually true.
After the Celtics won, right? And then two is, I don't know if you've been watching all the Coach Kano videos online, but he's been inviting Coach Mazzulla out. So it's kind of like one of those things where if he was the owner, he wouldn't be inviting him out to games and say like, hey, I know that Pep, you know, influenced you with your coaching. Maybe you can come down here, influence me, and we can talk coach to coach. Joe would have just already shown up and done that. So
yeah,
that's the other one. But Tim, actually, in the Discord, he beat me to it before I could even write anything. So I just saved it for the pod. It was a confusion, I think, because there are some Celtics. One of the owners in the Celtics operation is an investor in one of the soccer teams in Europe. So they're in,
Serie A, Atalanta.
Yeah, Atalanta, right. And so there's that piece. But then the other one is that there is a former Celtics player who is one of the few publicly outspoken owners of Rhode Island FC. It's one of the few that we saw from the very beginning. We don't normally get those people to talk about it, but he's been very public about it. And that's former Celtic forward Daniel Theis. So he's on the Clippers now, I think. It's been a minute since I've paid attention to his career. But that's one of the owners of the group. So it's one of those things where, no, Joe's more than welcome to buy a part of the team. I'm sure Michael Parkhurst and Brett Johnson would not mind a more, as famous Rhode Islander, especially in the sporting world, coming in and stepping up to that. But it's not something that is actually in existence now. So all of that said, you know, we hope we see him out at a game. I know Coach has been inviting him, but sorry, guys, we don't get to take that one.
So moral of the story is don't trust ChatGPT.
There's some morals there. It ain't ChatGPT. You're right about that.
AI's not there yet.
Not at all. Speaking of things that are there, though, let's talk about that steel topping off ceremony last week. Again, this is a week ago now. It just feels like it's our rotation is so completely off here. But Rhode Island FC, they did get to complete their final piece of structural steel being placed at Tidewater Landing. I totally misread what that meant. I thought it was the highest piece of steel. Mm. And we went in there. I was like looking up and I was like, well, I see the press box. So it can't get higher than that. Where is this going? And then someone showed me like, it's just this beam right here. I'm like, that's not the highest point, guys. Like, I'm not that dumb. I can be dumb at times. You know me. I can be very dumb at times. But that's not the highest piece. And they said, no, it's just the final. That's what topping off means. And I was like, oh, I blew that one out of the water from the get-go. So, but it was a really fun event. Did you have a good time?
Yeah, that was really cool. I'm glad that they asked us out to it. That was cool of them. In hindsight, being around some of the big wigs, because, you know, some people were there, we really should have used that to kind of get some influence in there. Because there's like a crisis at hand. Like, I don't know what happened, but Fluffernutter ice cream from Warwick, I can't find it anywhere, guys. It's hot right now. What's going on? Someone gets in touch with them.
I'm going to review your notes more thoroughly in the future to make sure that we stay grounded in soccer politics and not ice cream logistical shortages within the state of Rhode Island.
I mean, these are important things.
These are dark times.
I mean, it was like 93 outsider.
I mean, so we did get to shake hands with a lot of important people. We got to connect with Mayor Don Grebian from Pawtucket again. It was great talking to him. We actually got a minute, weirdly, as we were leaving with Governor McKee, and we asked him a question because he had said something in his, you know, press read that he did. He had mentioned about like one of the next steps being the pedestrian bridge that needs to get built. And I thought it was really interesting that he emphasized that, because when we've heard about Fortuitous managing the project around Tidewater, it's always been that next step is the housing, right? Like, get all of those multi-unit homes ready, or get all of the infrastructure and the retail around it. Like, give us the next step on those plans. The pedestrian bridge to me just felt like it was something that would be cosmetic at the end of the day. Like, it was, we would need it, but like, we didn't need it that badly. And when he made that statement, as we were walking out, we're like, hey, and I just said, tell me more about this pedestrian bridge. It makes it sound like that Fortuitous isn't on the hook to do this. He's like, oh, no, no. Like, we are going to be building that bridge. Like, that was a commitment with the RFP. We'll be building that bridge, and we're going to start it now because we build bridges. It was very like, we build bridges, which is a bad thing to say in this state right now because we all know what's going on with the Washington Bridge and the Warwick ice cream joke. And then two, like, I think back to the pedestrian bridge in downtown Providence where it was supposed to be like $15 million and it ended up being like $47 million for a walkway bridge, not even like a like heavy traffic car bridge. So I'm a bit suspicious about, but he went out on the record and said like, hey, no, we own building that bridge and we're going to get that thing done sooner than later. So
I think that kind of tracks though, right? Any sort of pedestrian or transportation infrastructure would be something that would be on the state as opposed to private. Maybe I'm wrong, but usually I think like governments. But
usually I think I'm right.
No, I usually think stuff like that probably comes, you know, from the government.
So does Aid. So does everything else. Hey, I love where this is going tonight. Again, this is going to be a top 10. I can already feel it. So let's get into this because
top 10 raising anchors go.
You guys have no idea what you're in store for. Buckle up. But let's get into this because there was something that I thought was really interesting. I got an email today and I wanted to talk about it because I feel like the timing of this could have been better. Speaking of like making commitments on bridges and whatnot. And that is the 2025 Rhode Island FC Tidewater season ticket memberships have opened up. And Jason, did you know that for just $50 you can get secured a general seat? Or for $100, you can get a premium seat reservation secured for your 2025 ticket needs.
Yeah, I actually got the same email earlier today.
And that's, of course, if you don't already have season ticket membership this year. But this is like the, hey, if you didn't already buy them, you're going to be missing out if you don't jump on it for next year. It kind of felt weird to read that, knowing that the fans right now really want to see this team kind of shift into high gear. Is it too soon? Like, I'm not here to bag on them. I know that they have a business at the end of the day, but like, is it too soon to be talking about 2025?
I think this actually makes sense. It was in the news, you know, the governor was there. So there is some like good news about the stadium, which we can't say very often.
Sure.
So to kind of follow up on that and the FOMO hype interest, people say, oh, hey, look, it's actually going to get done. Maybe there are some holdouts. I feel like I've talked to a few people who are like, yeah, I'll wait till Tidewater before I...
Really?
Yeah. Not a lot. Just a few. Maybe they're just... Smithfield's like 15 minutes too far, maybe.
Maybe we just need like some pitchforks and chase them into the stadium because we only ever chase our fans away when there's a difference of opinion there. Listen, I don't, again, it's just business, like you said. It just felt weird where I'm just begging for a first win at home. And it's like,
yeah,
you
but
do you want my money?
The front office can't control things like that, you know?
I know. Well, I wish they could. I wish they could control like one extra win.
They just need to push the right levers, right?
Is it lever or lever? I had this conversation the other day with someone. We couldn't come to a consensus.
That could just be a like European difference, maybe the way that they pronounce it.
Chat, is it lever or is it lever? We need to know.
And I think the joke with Barca activating the levers to, you know, get all their cash flow to, you know, dig themselves out of a hole.
Okay. I say levers. You say it's lever 2000, which is a bar of soap. It's a lever is what you pull. That's how I've always internalized it. But
on a soccer podcast, it's lever. When I'm talking to you on the street, it's lever.
I love it. And then just we want to kind of get into this too real fast. Again, not a promotion, we promise. Just it's something that I think is really cool because one, when you look at it, the next home game is going to be a big deal for us because one, it's our first really our only Wednesday home game. We do have a couple like quote unquote midweek games, but it's Fridays and whatnot. So this is going to be a really cool one. The reason I even bring this up, and it's on the screen right now for the Pride promotion, is again, this is one of those things where you get a t-shirt and it's almost the value of the ticket. So like, even if you already are a season ticket member and you've been like, hey, I want that shirt, I want to rock that shirt,
It's a pretty good deal.
Go get it. And if you have friends, bring them out to the game. Then as a result, make them buy you a beer. And that's called profit. So you'll be squared away. The other thing, too, is it was brought to my attention. I've seen this shirt for like a year now. It's not a new merch piece. Did you see that the RI in Pride is a little bit more accentuated? So just a little bit larger. It's subtle, but I love it. And I need to get me one of these shirts. So
yeah, those are really cool. That probably got us to the top of the list in terms of states that are LGBTQ friendly. They saw it and they're like, oh yeah,
it's in the name. It's in the name. I love it.
Really quickly though, we look at our opponent. Is there any confliction there as a previous Train Gang 2023 season supporter? Listen,
I needed a team. Okay. You picked a team that isn't even in the league anymore.
Yeah. So I did the right thing.
You didn't know that. You didn't know that until December. So don't even start with that. We didn't even get to go to that stadium. So no, listen, El Paso Locomotive holds no place in my heart. We're going to be talking with Phil about it. We've had conversations with all the USL show guys to make sure that we get them on the pod. It is one of those things where I am not worried about El Paso Locomotive. I am worried about Wilmer Cabrera right now because he seems to be doing all the right things for that squad.
Wilmer Cabrera revolution. Yeah that's kind of interesting. Earlier on in the season, we're like, well, maybe that will be one we can win. At this point, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Those Miami games can't come fast enough, right?
Oh my gosh. If honestly, like earlier in the season, I was like, okay, we'll get our first win in front of fans on a Wednesday and at the end of June. I don't know, guys. That's next week's problem, though. For this week, we're going to focus on Lou City here.
Yeah, that's a future me problem.
Oh, man, let's kick that down. So speaking of, though, and you kind of tied it in with the joke about Miami FC, when I went to go pull the stats for this, because when we did the recap of the Memphis game, it was just the immediate stats, right? I didn't pull, like, how are we doing? How are we progressing as a club or in decline? I knew we only had one win, but I didn't know we were the only team left in the league that only had one win.
Yeah, not great. Even Miami FC, the for all intents and purposes worst team in the league, they have two. Not a lot of draws from there, just tons and tons of losses.
So would you rather have two wins and 12 losses, or would you rather have one win and, what is it, nine ties, nine draws?
I don't think I would want the losses. I mean, especially because from what I've seen from the team, I feel like it's just, and I feel like you just keep saying this, but they're really close. And a lot of losses would be pretty demoralizing, I think, at this point.
How many losses is a lot of losses now? Because we're starting to collect them. We're not collecting wins. How many is a lot?
We have four at this point, right?
Yep.
Say seven or eight.
Okay.
Would be not great. I mean, it's also in perspective, though, like how many games are we into the season, right? If we're talking at the end of the season and that wins column goes up, or at least we do the crazy thing and get the most amount of draws ever, then at least we can laugh about that.
Well,
and you know, get our DrawKings t-shirts made.
Listen, DrawKings notwithstanding, if you look at the current projections, right, we're a little over a third of the way through. The most points on the trajectory we're at right now is going to be around 36 points, which, spoiler alert, that's basically what Lou City has right now. That's not going to be enough to get us into the playoffs.
When I did some homework a few pods ago, 43-ish was kind of where I landed at, is what you need to probably get into playoffs. So that's going to be a little shy of that.
Yeah, that's five wins shy almost when you think about where we would land, because obviously they're not going to have the exact same thing going into it. But with that magic number being north of 40 and our current trajectory sub 40, this is something that the club's really going to have to start looking at. And, you know, it's one of those things too, where like, we haven't moved up or down in a long time. We've been like thoroughly stuck in that 11th place.
Coasting.
Yeah. So listen, I don't have a lot to say on this in preparation. Lou City is interesting because the last time we talked about it, we'll get into here in a second with the table standings. We got a lot of feedback that like, we were like riding high and mighty on Lou City as a team. Like our fans, our loyal rap fans, we haven't used rap fans in a while.
Yeah.
Our rap fans told us that, you know, this wasn't something that they had ever heard us do. Usually we talk more equally, more charitable to ourselves. But what we had seen from Lou going into that game was that we all kind of anticipated it was going to be a bloodbath. And for all the people, all the naysayers out there, like, oh yeah, it was just you, Matt. No, when you go back to the scoring predictions, everyone had that as a draw at best, but most of us thought it was going to be a loss. And then we went and pulled the predictable unpredictable of a 0-0 against one of the hottest teams in USL right now. Nothing has changed. You know what I mean? Like, Lou City's just getting better. They're getting into the groove, and we are still trying to find ourselves. So, like,
yeah, I'd argue there's a little bit of change there, but at the end of the day, they're still winning. So the changes that I've seen are not, you know, anything to say that they are not on a still very good trajectory and that they are not a formidable opponent.
Right. No, and I say that with 100% kind of brevity to the situation. I'm just simply saying that, like, we're there adjusting. I feel like we're still at the starting line trying to pick the best starting 11 we have at our disposal. Who's healthy, who doesn't have a red card. We'll get into some of that in a little bit here. It just feels like we're on two different wavelengths going into this game on Saturday.
Yeah, that they're halfway around the first lap. We're trying to put our tires back on.
Yeah, yeah. Shadow Wolf writes in, good evening or morning. It's 2:28 in the morning. Shadow Wolf, you're the hero we deserve. I'm just kidding. We just need you. We don't deserve you. You're so good to us. If you do need some thoughts on Wilmer, I know a certain former German Taurus Media member. Hey, listen, I would love to hear it. We've always heard that kind of Cabrera was ostracized from MLS and the Toros were his only landing point. We know that he had some work in the youth academy there and kind of got some people very close to him kind of going up the ranks that he knew could do well. But yeah, we're a little dark on Cabrera after the MLS days.
I had heard that he never really got the support from the Toros that he needed to...
Well, yeah, they were closed. They financially shut down.
Yeah. I mean, which it makes sense now where we are. But as he was, it was trying to make them a competitive team, he just wasn't getting the resources to do that. So maybe now in El Paso, maybe we'll see if that changes. I think it's still a little early.
And then, of course, Nate reminds us. Nate's going to be the constant reminder that it's 14, and we only have 5 to go before we tie the record. So don't worry, Nate. We're track.
Almost there. Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of which, let's just recap this so real quick. So RFC now has 12 points on a 1-9-4 record. Draw Kings locked down. Yeah. So we 4 weeks now? We haven't really moved up in the table standings or down.
Miami's just keeping.
Yeah, they're stuck there.
Us letting us know we're not last place in this league.
Yeah. So winless in our last 8 games, and we've lost 14 points now from
winning positions, right? Yeah. And I mean, we saw that with the Memphis game. We talked about that on Thursday last week. This team has, if they don't have a scoring problem, they have a defensive problem. If they don't have a defensive problem, they have a, you know, final minutes managed situation and opportunity. Or then the team's not healthy and we don't have our best players on the field. It's like we have the ref, you know, like we can throw a lot of different problems this way. This team, I don't know about finding themselves anymore. I think they know who they are, and I think they need to, like, start rising to the occasion and stepping up in the roles and the expectations that the front office and the coach have for these players. I mean, at the end of the day, 12 points out of, what is that? That's 15 games. What's the PPG on that now? That's 0.8 points per game. That's not a winning squad.
Yeah, the fact that the team has been in winning positions to lose 14 points shows that there's something there, right? Because we put ourselves in good positions, but that final execution is just lacking.
Right. And, you know, what's so weird is that, like, while we're still sorting this out, Lou City, on the other hand, has no equal with those 35 points. Again, 3 times the number of points we have, basically. 3 times. That's insane. And it shows in their record. They're an 11-2-2 team, which one of their draws is us. And it puts them both in first place in the Eastern Conference, as well as, like, the total table standings for the Supporters Shield. They've expanded their goal differential since the last time we went, which was, I think, 17 goal differential at that time. It's now up to 25. And they have 4 wins out of their last 5 matches with a loss to Tampa in added time. I went back and watched that game because we lost to Tampa. I wanted to see what Lou did. That was a That was a dicey game.
I think most opponents in the USL find it tough to go to Al Lang Stadium and come away with something.
Yeah, so. that team was bawling on the day. They got it in added time, like 2 minutes over. Like it was just really good showing from Tampa. But also Lou didn't, like, they didn't make many mistakes, but the ones they did, they got capitalized on.
They fought back. They were actually down 2-0 and it was, I think they scored right before the first half to kind of get themselves in a good position there.
Yep. And so even though they had the loss in Tampa, they did walk away with a 1-0 win against Pittsburgh Riverhounds yesterday as their midweek game. So the interesting thing with Lou City coming out this time around is that they have three games this week across 7 days. They lost in Tampa away. They won away to Pittsburgh. And now they're bringing it home to Lynn Stadium here with us traveling this Saturday to face them in what I think is probably the best stadium in the USL right now, at least until Tidewater gets finished.
Yeah. So I had mentioned a few minutes ago that there has been, I'd argue there has been a little bit of a change. So like if we look at their recent form, if we go back six games, which includes the 0-0 draw against us, they're technically all close games if we throw out that Detroit game. All of those games were decided by one goal. If you go back and look.
Okay, yeah.
Where Detroit seemed almost that like a frustration from against us that they had to lash out to someone.
Right.
So earlier on in the season, we were seeing them just smash people 4-5, 6.
Was Hartford the last game where they smashed like 6-1?
I think so.
Okay.
Since we've played them, all the recent games are, you know, within one goal. And I think what most they've scored is 2 or 3. So they're all close games. I don't want to get hopeful or anything, but I don't know if that some of their offense is like, they're still winning, right?
Right.
Except that the one loss, but it's not that, you know, we're going to put big numbers up on you. So maybe some of that is slowed down. When I actually went back to look at our previous notes on some of the players we were talking about, a few of them, their stats haven't even really changed.
That just means they're that consistent. They don't need to do more than what they've already accomplished, especially as maybe midfielders or defenders, right?
Possibly. They're not putting 4, 5, and 6 past people anymore. They're just, you know, being efficient.
The league's getting accustomed to what they can do.
Potentially.
So let's talk about this makeup here. So let's get into the Rhode Island FC side of things first, and let's get these injuries out of the way. Right now, it's only Amos. Amos Shapira-Thompson is the only one still not listed, at least as of today. It's hard to get an injury report before an away leg. I always can usually go to the field on Friday or Thursday when it's a home, but since they probably are traveling tomorrow morning, I can't get that information. But if we go off of what Coach told us at the last post-game interview, he did mention that Grant Stoneman would be eligible for selection for this game. It would be enough time in the timeline for him to potentially see some substitution minutes. So we can anticipate Grant Stoneman there. And then he said that Chico was basically going to be healthy enough at the Memphis game, but it would be a day-to-day option. So unless Chico, they've discovered more rehab is needed or more recovery time, I would imagine he's also available for selection. So really, it's just Amos, which, by the way, we're going to have Amos on the podcast next week to talk to him about his story and his journey. He's done a lot of... He's seen a lot of things. We covered him very early on in his signing. He was one of the, I think he was the second or third player announced because it was what? It was Koke.
Yeah,
Connor,
he was early on.
Because he was at the jersey reveal. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, so we're going to have him on and just kind of talk about what he's been doing and kind of his road to recovery. And then the only two players that we won't see on the night are Connor McGlynn and Koke Vegas with their red cards each. There was some questions asked online after the last podcast around what did Connor McGlynn say, and I haven't seen anything good, but according to fans that have spoken with other players or other members of the staff, and this is coming secondhand, they don't feel like he said something that should have been red card worthy, but in the moment, like, you just don't talk to the ref especially after the game's over, just walk away.
Yeah, at that point,
yell at a wall.
The results are, the game has stopped, the result already happened. Just, you know, go yell at a wall or something if you need to get it out.
Shadow Wolf writes in about teams struggling. So Listen, he's not wrong. Honestly, all of the teams struggle currently. Tampa doesn't look that stable. Charleston was meh recently. Sacramento lost twice. So not only Louisville is a bit dull. I kind of agree to that. But like, these are also teams that they've created such a buffer. I mean, Louisville is now 12 points ahead. No, 10 points ahead of the next contender in the Supporter Shield. Like, they could lose four games before a club even catches up to them.
Yeah, I think that Louisville and Charleston were kind of running away with it. But the rest of the league, there's a lot of parity. And you can see on any given night, I think, with the exception of, I don't know if I'd ever pick Miami to beat someone, but, you know, there's always an opportunity there for an upset, especially a lot of these teams have gotten very strong at home. You know, Tampa Bay's up and down, but you never bet against them like at Atlanta.
And we're going to talk about the strength of this team at home with Louisville City. But before we get that, let's get to the formation. People are saying we need to change things up because in Memphis we didn't have a defensive composure at the end. I'm saying now that if anything, the 3-5-2 has proven itself in a way that, like, the coach is seeing this team buy in. There's a couple of mistakes and some opportunities.
Yeah, I think people are remembering the last 10, 15 minutes too much and not
the last six minutes.
And forgetting, I'm counting extra time.
Oh,
but,
okay.
And not remembering that the 84th, whatever minute, we were up 2-0.
Right.
Right. And we were away. Like, you don't want to go to someone's house and expect to control the ball there. You know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do to get the points and get out.
Right. So we're going to see, I think it's a 3-5-2. We posted that in what we kind of thought. I started experimenting, trying to upgrade, our branding on it. So I have some ideas for this in the future, but I've got it as a 3-5-2. Put this up on the screen here for a second. I've got Kofi Tchouaméssi, Kriffa Yao, and Frank Ndarsa in that back three. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. It looks like it's going to be something that it can at least be, you know, upgraded and constantly tweaked, especially with the likes of Stoneman returning if we need center rotation. But I think Tchouaméssi gets another call at that back three now after such a great, you know, on the game performance that he had. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think he was a bit of a revelation in some ways. His stats that game were fantastic, and I was like, where did this player come from?
why haven't we seen more of him? Yeah.
So yeah, I would hope to see if that was not just, you know, lightning in a bottle, and is this something that maybe he can kind of do on the regular for us?
Agreed. And then, you know, in that five, we've got Turnbull. This is mostly the same. Turnbull, Holstead, Ibarra, and Alves, which, by the way, I talked to Gabby Alves, and it's Alves. I know there's a Portuguese emphasis in Rhode Island to say, like, Alves, but it is Alves. So for all of you that have been saying it wrong or you didn't know, this is an education. When you have to learn how to pronounce people's names, it's really important that you get it right. So Alves. But then I think the middle one here is where it is going to be a bit interesting. On the graphic, I have Fuson, but after talking with you for a bit, I think maybe it's Joe Brito instead. What do we think about that? Is it Fuson or Brito in that mid spot to replace the likes of Jack Panayotu and Connor, the ghosts of Jack and Connor?
I think we should give Joe Brito another chance. I think it's time for the Joe Brito show, as they say. Maybe Noah's played a lot of minutes for this team. Maybe he can be either a rotation option, or maybe we'll see him up. Maybe we'll get the top, you know, striker positions wrong, and maybe he'll be up there somewhere. You know, Doyle's actually recently played a lot of minutes too. Maybe Noah will get the start up there. But I'm pretty confident that we will see Joe. I think that he might. He might be able to slot into that kind of role there pretty well.
Okay.
After kind of not doing it for a while, you know.
And then I don't care enough to agree or disagree, because I think each one of those players brings different weapons.
Oh yeah.
And the reality is that Connor or Jack P are the best two for it. I had a conversation with Jack P. If he gets the chance, he's itching to come back and he wants to start playing for Rhode Island FC immediately. So he was at the Celtics championship win. He was watching that game in person. So it's one of those things where he wants to come back. I know this team wants him back. So whatever the politics are to get him to return, that's all that the that's
refs,
all that matters.
The refs point. Don't even use them. They're just like, I just go watch this game.
Right. So with that being said, getting into the strikers up front, I mean, we saw success on the night. Neither one of the players scored, but they created the right runs. They created the right outlets to allow our midfield to score against Memphis. Do we see Williams and Doyle get that return nod at the front pair, or does Fusan find his way in? Does Chico get a return here? Nate has a question about, you know, who's the super sub here, and I think there's some questions there, along with a certain Rwandan player who hasn't seen minutes in quite a while. What do we think here?
Yeah, I think we might stick with what we did last time out in Memphis. Like I said, maybe a 30-minute run out at the end for Noah against some tired legs. Maybe he can bring some magic on the bench.
Do you think Noah's more effective as like a speedy alternate to just put the hurt on when it comes to forward attacking?
Possibly. He has a very good work rate, right? But at the same time, I don't know if I would call him a straight 10, right? He's not, his passing is not bad, but that's not one of his like strengths.
He's just been better on the year in a position where we haven't always had consistency. So he's shown flashes of brilliance to it, but it's not his native spot. It's not probably where he wants to be, but he would step in and do it like in this instance.
Yeah, I think he's best as like maybe a kind of a striker who has some free range, or even like a slight bit of a winger who likes to come inside. But yeah, I kind of liked that Doyle and JJ Williams kind of combo. I think I'd like to see that again, see if that can bear us any fruits.
So is Chico a super sub then for the time
being? I think so.
That's a weird thing to say about your, you know, former Golden Boot.
Yeah, I mean, he is coming back from an injury. And so he earlier in the year, he had a quad injury too, right? Do you think maybe he actually, it didn't fully heal? And maybe, do you think there was any sort of...
This was an ankle the second time around.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't, coach clarified okay. It was an ankle on the next injury report.
Okay,
so.
I thought it was a quad. And I was like, maybe he needs a few extra days off. I mean,
he could be fighting through that. Some players are very stubborn, and especially when they feel like they owe it to the squad and the club to do their job. Maybe, and, you know, right now we don't have an answer for a goal-scoring perspective. So perhaps, but right now those are completely isolated and independent things. So... okay, so that's your answer. You think Chico's a super sub. What about Quisera? What do we do about the Rwandan?
I think he should get a run in. I don't know if he'll come right back into the starting lineup, but I think he'll get some minutes.
I know we'll see him on this game. I just don't know if it's as a substitution impact player or if it's in the starting 11. So, I mean... If whatever it is, we know there's going to be some roster shakeup, right? Just because of the red cards alone. I guess the question I would ask you, you've in my world, you've coined the chop and change. Is this more chopping and changing from Coach Cano? And if it is this coming out of necessity or is this coming out of experimentation?
I hope not. I mean, we recently saw some more chopping and changing because I don't think Coach expected to lose Paniotu so fast, right? We get him and all of a sudden it felt as if things started to click, right? It's like, oh, we kind of need someone who can, you know, take the ball, break the lines, can move those passes forward and you know, put balls against people in good positions. And then, you know, after a few weeks, boom, he's gone. So all of a sudden Coach has to then kind of go back to previous tactics before. So I think until he comes back, I think we're going to kind of go back to this kind of 3-5-2 thing.
Okay. Do you still think Sacramento with Jack P, his first game, was our best game of the season?
Potentially. I think if the last game wasn't very easily, could have panned differently. Maybe that could have been it. But I think that last, you know, 6 minutes plus extra time kind of soured a lot of people's opinion on that match.
Right, right. Shadow Wolf writes in, imagine you had to trade Chico away. Which player position would you like to bring in? It's just a thought, and maybe Chico's high pay is meh results on the pitch. Who would you swap for Chico?
Maybe like another kind of, you know, Jack Panio too. Kind of like a player in a similar mold, right? Who is more of a finesse passer of the ball.
Right.
So that we have someone long-term for that too, because maybe we will get Panio too back in a few weeks, but maybe at the end of the season, then he's gone.
Right. Can we get like Alex Panio too? Like whatever. just Chuck Panio too. Whatever we need. Whatever we need.
He just shows up with a mustache on.
I love it. So let's get into Lou's formation. We've still got it pegged as, I mean, it's a 3-4-3 or it's a 3-4, 2-1, depending on how you kind of look at this at times. But we've got Damian Loss, who's he's probably one of the best keepers in the league right now. You've got Narragansett royalty, Sean Toch, out on right back. He wasn't in the Pittsburgh game, which is why I think we will see him here. It was an injury. I think they were rotating some of their defensive players. You got Ordonez and Adams kind of tying off that back three. And then you've got Aiden McFadden, Taylor Davila, Elijah Widener, and Jake Morris holding down the midfield four or midfield five, just depending on kind of like how you subscribe to that. I guess it would help if I put the Lou City lineup up and not the Rhode Island one. And then you've got Adrian Perez, Wilson Harris, and Jorge Gonzalez in that top three. There's been a little bit of rotation there with, I think, Reza has seen some minutes recently for them instead of Perez. And then I think Wilson Harris has been kind of getting subbed off earlier and earlier. The guy's already got like 10 goals for the season, so he's earned his paycheck. But this will be more of the same. And no matter what we see in terms of the players, this team does not change their formation. So they have players in reserve to continue their model and their shape of what they want to play. Maybe it's not their A squad, but it will be a version of this that hits the pitch.
And that makes sense, right? This team is doing very well. They know who they are. No need for them to change it.
Let's talk about how good this team is doing, because I loved pulling up this stat. So what you have on the screen here is the players that have scored for both Lou City and Rhode Island FC. I'm fighting a sneeze here. But as you can see, quick math. I think Harris has more goals than our entire team.
Yeah, most team.
Almost the entire team. You're counting it, aren't you? How close is it? He's one off.
Our entire team has 12 goals.
Okay, so he's two off. He's basically one more game against Hartford away from beating our entire squad. It's interesting here because they only have five or six players that have goals on the year, but all of these players have at least three goals or more. This is a team that where there are shooters or there are goal scoring threats. They come in bunches. They come multiple times when it comes to scoring those dangerous opportunities, whereas we have just been spreading the love. Every player that we have, with the exception of Chico and Turnbull, it's all just a bunch of ones. So we've rotated, we've shared the love. We literally have rotated around, and that makes us a bit more unpredictable, I'd say. But at the same time, we're only at our highest goal scoring is their lowest denominator, and we don't even know if Chico's going to see action on the night.
Yeah, it doesn't look great.
I mean, when you look at this stat, not just the domination of what Louis City has in terms of goal production numbers, is this a healthy sign that we've got such low but spread out goal opportunities? Or is this something where, like, J.J. Williams is not on here at all, right? Like, is this...
It's good to see your goal spread out, right? You don't want to rely on one person too much, but a lot of these are all just ones, right? If this was, five or six players all had three, and then we could look upon this a little more favorably, because also we'd probably be talking about a team that has more points.
Is this though then like, is this, is, I guess where I'm really going with this, is this an indication that coach's system is working where he has handpicked a squad that is goal capable? We just don't have a lot of goals on the season for it. Because remember, what this shows me is most of these ones is where we've had 0-0 draws, right? I think we've had five of those now. So like, or and a couple 1-1 draws as well. Is this where, like, to you, is this a sign that his style, his structure is working? We just need to kind of pump up those numbers. Those are rookie numbers.
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm still in a position where I have some hope for where this team can eventually get to.
Eventually, but we're not going to talk about it on this match because I'm going to break all of your hope and destroy it. And any listener that's watching or will be hearing this tomorrow, I'm just going to crush all of your dreams right now. Because let's, like I said, we got told we were too high and mighty on this team last time. But here's the scary stat that no one wants to hear, but they need to hear. This home leg for Lou is going to be a completely different animal than when they came to us. They have not lost a game yet at home this year. They are the only team left in the league to not have at least a draw or a loss on the season. This is Fortress Lynn Family Stadium right now. This is on lockdown. And for a team like ourselves that has struggled at times to find ways to score, this is not the place to try to find it on the weekend. Like, I don't know.
So what you're saying is
stats. This is going to be bad.
They're due for a draw.
If we predict a loss, we get a draw, right? If we predict a draw, we get a loss. So we'll get to that in the scoring predictions. But it's an impressive stat, and it shows why they've been doing so well this year. All of their losses and all of their draws have been on the road. This team's doing exactly what they're supposed to do. They win in front of their fans, and they only win. If we had this same opportunity at Burn, I think our fortunes would be in a completely different direction.
Yeah.
Our fans would have a healthier impression of us on the first, you know, the first leg of the first season, but that's not the case. So I don't anticipate this being anything favorable for Rhode Island FC going into Saturday. Like, do you disagree, or is there something here where you think that that's going to be something that matters?
At the end of the day, you can't, you know, if it was like, hey, we're going to lose, why even play the match, right? I mean, you always have to have...
I'm not saying to, like, forfeit before, like, they'd save the gas money, save the Breeze airline air miles. Let's just not bother. I'm not saying that,
and
but I'm a realist here.
Yeah, no, and I get you, because I can be a realist very often as well, too. This team is still young. They need to find their place. And in some ways, I think they can look at it as... even if it doesn't go well, it's more mileage that they've got together as a team, almost like a learning experience where they can, if they can go out there and, you know, whatever the result is, come back stronger as a team. I mean, I think that can be, you know, a good thing. A win in a way that if they start to get better as a unit, and if we see some good play from them, and at the end of the day, we just say, hey, look, this is the best team in the league. You know, we can only do so much.
I don't disagree with that. And I do think there are opportunities. Scott actually calls it out. Scott's joining us from Wales right now. I think he's right. And one of my big takeaways was endure, right? Because this team will be tired by this leg. That'll be 3 games in 7 days. And 2 of them were away travels, which Pittsburgh and Florida are not like they didn't road trip this, like they were on some sort of concert tour. So they've bounced around. There could be an opportunity as the final game of this leg to take advantage of something and catch them off, you know, off guard.
Yeah, they're probably a bit worn out after this long week for them.
And I didn't see a lot of heavy rotation. You know, they are very good with their starting 11. They need to kind of go up. We saw why in Tampa they were chasing. They probably had to burn more minutes, more effort just to get back into that game. So yes, there is an opportunity. But that being said, like, we talked about this on the first leg, which it's so weird too. Like, we haven't done, that's why I named this pod the first second pod, or because it's like, this is the first time we'll ever play a game or an opponent for the second time yet this season. It's really hard to, and it's so relatively recent that not a lot has changed. You know, we talked about in the first episode with Lou that they're a team that loves to channel balls to the wings, and then they do this little cutback at the top of the 18-yard box, and they just start shooting.
I love that move in FIFA. Works every time.
I mean, it does, and it does for Lou, too. They may shoot a lot, but they score more goals than most teams because no one knows how to kind of contain that group of people who have scored goals for the team because, again, like, that seems to be this unknown quantity. So there's like, but they're not doing anything new. They're not reinventing themselves for this game.
There are times when I've watched Louisville this season where it almost feels as if they thrive on creating chaos against the, in like their opposition box, and just kind of you know, when you're doing those cutback passes, you're dragging and pulling people into different spots. And within that, they're moving people, they're making opportunities and getting themselves, you know, in good opportunities to score because they're dragging people all over the place because they are very quick too. They like to play the ball down the field and just go.
Yeah. They're a high octane team. Nate, by the way, when is Nate, the goalkeeper, gonna get some minutes? I think Nate just wants the other Nate.
Yeah. There on the field. I mean, sorry to break it to you, buddy, but
Jackson Lee could get a red card in this game.
I'm not going to say it can't happen, but it is very rare that you see your team field a third string goalkeeper.
He's going to be on the bench. So maybe if you want what happened to Koke to happen to Jackson, Nate, you just have to will it into existence, and we'll see Nate Silvera get on the pitch and then get Team of the Week honors, and we'll have all three of our keepers, USL Keeper Team of the Week. It's a stat that's never been done before. And then real quick, we're not going to get into players tonight because I think we talked about them in the first one. So if you want to hear about like the player threats and assessments that we did, I would listen back to that episode a few weeks, like 5 or 6 weeks ago. But Shadow Wolf writes in about Taylor Davila, which we already talked about him in kind of what we were breaking down. And I think I know why Shadow Wolf is talking about Taylor, because he's a former Toros player. So I know that he knows him very good. I agree. He is a feisty bulldog, and he is a tackler. I don't know if I would say he's an incredible chance creator. I do know that he can string together passes.
Yeah, I did go back, and like I said, I kind of updated these. We're not going to really go over it, but I updated some of their stats. His goals and assists are the same, but his chance creation has gone up since we've last played him. Not a ton, but 7, I think. So that's a slight drop off. What, in the last 6 games, 7 chances created. So that's like about 1.2 a game. Whereas before, he already had 22 chances. Maybe there's some outlier in that stat where I didn't go back and look at every single game, like where those came from. Maybe one game he just created 7 chances or something. Maybe that hard for a game.
Probably. Probably. Darren writes in, really good question. With the chaotic style of Louisville, is it better that Jackson is in goal? I actually agree with that. Koke is a better distributor and a better presser playing out the back with possession, but we've seen Jackson Lee typically be the better shot stopper on the night. Koke usually seems a bit haphazard and disorganized.
I think Koke gives this team better control to play the style they want to play, and there are some risks there in terms of, you know, maybe he likes to do the sweeper keeper thing and come out of nowhere. And most of the time it does work, right? He has saved us.
Until it doesn't.
But if we just want a traditional shot stopper, I think Lee is probably the better option. And maybe in some weird way, maybe that is kind of a feather in our cap for this game, and we can come away with a draw.
Is the deep cut that Koke or that Kana was always going to play Jackson in this game?
I don't know.
Deepest cut. No, but it's a great observation, Darren. I agree with you. I think Jackson is actually the better alternate on the night for that one. Listen, let's get into what Rhode Island needs to get right to walk away with some points, or at least a point out of this game.
Okay, so like I had mentioned, Louisville was slowed down a little bit in terms of pumping big numbers past people. I was really impressed with that first 84 minutes against Detroit. And honestly, I would really like to see that again. Even if, like I had mentioned earlier, if it's not us walking away with the results, I want to see this team play a system and just kind of continue to learn and become really good at it, as opposed to, you know, chopping and changing.
Okay. I mean, I kind of already spilled it with what Scott had mentioned, but I think it's just endure. You have the rest. They don't. We haven't played in 10 days. They've played 3 games in 7, right? So you get to figure that out and have some fun with it. I will say that, you know, what I'm more interested in is tactically, what do you play for in the next? Because we have a short week ourselves with the El Paso game coming this Wednesday. So as much as I hate to even like indulge it, what do you play for? Obviously you play to win, but do you play the hottest team in the league and burn out your best players to maybe scratch away at a surprise victory, an upset for the ages, or a draw? Or do you go and say, hey, maybe I have a defensive showing. I bring some of the players that normally never get starting minutes. This is their one game to prove. I'm not expecting you to win, but I'm expecting you to do something incredible that shows me that you're ready for the next chance and the next opportunity. And then I bring all of the firepower to El Paso, and we bury them on Pride Night, and we make sure Wilmer Cabrera never wants to step foot in Rhode Island ever again. What's more important? Because I think a fan right now in the infancy of this team in this league, I hate to say it, but I think the El Paso game is more important than the Lou City game.
I agree that that one is more important, but you have two forced rotations, right? Koke and Connor will come back, so that's two people. So you're already seeing some rotation. I think that trying to get a win at home is more important. That's why I think that the team should try and go in the same kind of style that they did in Memphis. This, like, hey, we don't care if we're going to have 36% possession of the ball. We're going to play a bit more defensive and then just try and kind of hit them on the counter or a break or maybe a set piece and just try to do the best that you can to get out of there and not embarrass yourself and then potentially either, you know, steal a win or squeak out with a draw.
So you're saying we have to weather the Louisville City storm?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know how that would work, but
out. We're hoping that they're tired after this long week, right?
Man, that's scary. Just thinking about like letting Lou City take shots on you, just it's terrifying.
I'm not saying not try and play.
No, but, and neither am I. I think more of like, I guess where does it matter more? And does Isaac Anking get a start? I think he's a phenomenal substitution rotation. Does he get a start? Does Vane get a start? If Chico's only going to be a sub, does he get 60 minutes? You know, we've already talked about it, but it's just like, that's the thing.
Yeah,
in my mind.
I think it's still too early. And because this team doesn't have a lot of points on the board, I think you have to take every game seriously. Okay. But in the back of his mind, I think he'll be looking more towards the El Paso game. But at the same time, still trying to, within that flexibility, put the best team he can out. Because there's another break after. There is no game on the 29th, right?
Right.
So it's another short, condensed week. So just go out and they're going to get another few days off.
Okay. What do you have for predictions here? So let's talk this through.
All right. So despite everything I said, there's still a little bit of hope. I'm going for the 2-2 DraftKings nonsense. Let's get to double digit draws. Imagine how great that'll be. 10 draws on.
I mean, FotMob's got it at 67% in favor of Lou City. 17-17 right now on a loss or a draw for Rhode Island.
So you're saying there's a chance.
What I'm saying is I already have predicted a loss against Lou, and we got a draw. So now I'm going to predict a draw and see what that does for him. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, this team has shown that they can get that done. But it was our environment. It was our home field advantage. It was our conditions. Let's see what they can do now against the hottest team in the league. And maybe they really are at this like weird unicorn of a team that can play to the level of our opponents, which we have seen time and time again, mm-hmm. right? We saw it at Sacramento minus a Jack P. And if you had told me what they could do there, even though it came out to a 2-2, I would still say that there's a ample chance that they can pull away something here. I just don't know what that looks like. And it'll be on game day to see what the lineup is and like what coaches' tactics are. But we're going to support it. We're going to have a good time with it. And we're going to try to make the most of it there.
Yeah, it's been a while. It feels like it's been a long time since I've seen him play. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's like I didn't know what to do with my Saturday last week at first. I was like, I normally have to be somewhere. Few last ones before we get into these events and get out of here. Shadow Wolf writes in, Louisville will be tired as the clock drags down, but they score early. They can be very relaxed. So maybe play like Czech Republic in the Euros right now. I do agree with that, but if they have to chase, they come in guns blazing, so they come in hot. So we'll see what happens there. And then Nate finishes off here with tactics from last match against them. You say that, Nate, but we didn't do anything on the night to look dangerous. So like if you want to play for the nil-nil and you want the draw kings, like I'll support it. But that wasn't really a fun game. Like at the end we were happy because it was like, wow, we held, you know, we'd had Charleston first, Pittsburgh, and then we held Lou, and you know, we held SAC even though we should have won the SAC game. Like we've held some of the best contenders in this league. I kind of don't want to do that anymore. I at least want to play for the win, and then maybe at the end we're just not good enough to close out the game. I would feel better with that than to not score any goals on the night and get like a nil-nil performance.
Yeah, but then after the match, if it was like a Rowdies game, would you feel, you know, when it's like, oh, we lost 4-1. I mean, that doesn't feel great.
Yeah, that's hard to say. But all right, well, hey, let's get these events and let's get out of here.
All right, so Saturday, June 22nd, RIFC finishes their back-to-back away leg when they take on Louisville at Lynn Family Stadium beginning at 8 p.m. You can watch the game on NESN and ESPN+. The official watch party will be at Shades On Brewery, and of course, Defiance will be at the Guild.
Are we going to go to Shades On? You've never been there. Do you want to go do that?
I don't know, maybe.
Don't tell Defiance that we might not be at the Guild. Maybe we need to spread our love around, too. Anyways, after that, we're back in action as the boys in Amber and Blue take on El Paso Locomotive on Wednesday, June 26th at Burns Stadium for Pride Night. The game will kick off at 8 p.m., and this one is on ESPN+. So looking forward to getting back into soccer before we take another break, and then we get back into soccer again. You know, but we have the Euros. We have Copa.
The Euros, Copa just started.
We'll probably be watching the America game on Sunday.
We can't wait for the America team to bring us some joy or misery. Who knows?
It'll be misery. We don't need to pretend like we don't know. Let's get out of here, guys, and we'll talk to you guys soon. So take us away, Jason.
All right. Make sure to check out our friends over at the Blazing Musket for all your New England soccer coverage, as well as RIFC news at theblazingmusket.com. And, of course, you can follow us on Twitter, Threads, and TikTok at RAFC Podcast, Instagram at Raising Anchor, and there's that website, www.raisinganchorpodcast.com.
Did you see the twin photo I put on social media of who wore it better? They all said you did.
Thanks.
Anchors up, buddy.
Anchors up.